Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 392nd episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia, and we are back.
We are back. I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of program and practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada. What does that mean? I do CPD here.
And you might need to explain CPD.
Yeah, I might. Learning. We learn up.
We're helping people get real smart.
Why were we away, James? That's your question.
I was away. I've been at a couple of conferences over the last little while. I was in Europe. You know, my European vacation. I went to a Too Much Medicine conference and a Preventing Overdiagnosis conference, one in Helsinki and Copenhagen. Really interesting group of people who are, you know, trying to do really good work at getting people on the right medications and off the wrong ones and not doing too many tests and all that sort of stuff. So that's where I've been.
Yeah, it was kind of too much medicine. I have a less reasonable excuse.
Yes, no, it's really inappropriate excuse, but go ahead.
I unfortunately had a subarachnoid hemorrhage, which isn't a small thing, it turns out. And it took me a little while to rebound from that.
It gave everyone a scare.
Completely recovered, but those who know me know that's not true.
It made us all, I'm sure it made you nervous too, but yeah, no, it was, you know, sort of out of left field for sure. But really thrilled that you're sort of back with us and that everything seems to be okay.
Yeah, no, things are getting better. Just, the usual after one of those things, tired and I think you said lazy, but I would say tired.
Yeah, you know, potato.
But no, things are getting better. Yeah. No, thank goodness, no impairment. So,
yeah, exactly.
Ready to do another podcast.
And you've all, during that time, you also made a move.
That's right. Yeah. It was obviously the one had nothing to do with the other in the sense that we didn't plan because of that, but it was... We were planning to move back to where I trained and where Brigida had grown up. And so
which is your wife, in case anyone's wondering.
Yes, that is my wife. And so we moved back to British Columbia.
We're thrilled to have you there. And you got an amazing place where you're living now. And it sounds like everything is going to go forward. So those, I think, are reasonable reasons why we've not done a podcast in about the last 6 weeks. And if someone would like to complain that, well, you know, you could have done a few, really, no. So what we want to do is we want to get back to a couple of new studies, and almost appropriately so, a topic that has to do with bleeding.
And strokes and that kind of thing.
That sort of fun sort of stuff. So for probably ever since aspirin has been around, there's always been a discussion about, is it of any value whatsoever to people to reduce the risk of cardiovascular events and so on? And I assumed wrongly, Mike, that we didn't need any more studies.
This is an interesting thing to me, and it came up during our lipid guideline, that people are more interested in being on aspirin than they are on statins in general. We certainly see it in our patients.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me as well is that aspirin has more risks and less benefit for the most part. And yet, and if it has a benefit, it's somewhere in that kind of 10 to 15% range that we see with a number of therapies for this is in primary prevention, but it doesn't really stop people from seeking it out. It's become almost a mantra now.
Like aspirin
prevents heart disease. So if you're over 50, just start it.
Yeah. But it's over the counter, so it's a lot safer.
Yeah. And that's another thing that makes people, it's kind of like it's natural. Well, in fact,
it is natural.
It was derived from natural. So we did, you know, when we think there's no more, I don't think there's a need for most statin studies anymore, but you know, we'll get more of those as well. Mm-hmm. This one, these are two studies that I don't know that we needed, and they found almost exactly what we'd expect. So
yeah, no, exactly. So let's go over them. And just so you know, there is another statin trial ongoing, and it's supposed to be published 2022, and it's in people over age 70. So it might answer a question that we don't have the exact answer.
That actually might be a reasonable, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but anyhow, let's dive into this one.
Yeah, so just so the first one that we're going to talk about is called the ARRIVE trial, and it was published in late August in The Lancet. And the title of the article is "The Use of Aspirin to Reduce Risk of Initial Vascular Events in Patients at Moderate Risk of Cardiovascular Disease." And obviously, it was an RCT, placebo-controlled trial. And so the whole purpose of doing this trial is, you know, in people at, you know, very high risk, and I know no one likes it when I use it. I don't like using that term. But when we're talking about people who, you know, have already had cardiovascular events, there may be a role for aspirin. Again, the numbers are not huge. But it's always been a question about when do you use it for primary prevention. And so they wanted to look at a group that in theory should benefit if they were going to benefit. And that's what they call a moderate risk. And I'll get into all of that sort of process in a minute. So this was a, like I said, a double-blind, placebo-controlled, multi-center study done in 7 countries. And they were looking at people, men over age 55 and women over age 60. And they excluded people at high risk of GI bleeding or other bleeding or diabetes. And that's important because you're going to talk about a study where they exclusively studied diabetic people with diabetes.
Right.
Yeah. And it's important to realize that they excluded people at high risk of GI bleeding. So it's keep that in the back of your mind when we go through the numbers. The main endpoint was a composite of time to first occurrence of cardiovascular death, MI, unstable angina, stroke, or transient ischemic attack, or basically any sort of cardiovascular event, which is exactly the sort of outcomes that we'd be, that I think people would be looking at. And their safety endpoints were bleeding. So their follow-up was about 60 months, or about, if you can do the math, Mike, that's 5 years. I'm just checking because you said you're a bit tired.
I am a bit tired.
Yeah.
This is making me more tired.
I know. So they ended up, so they enrolled around 12,500 people, a little bit of the baseline characteristics. Obviously, none of the people had diabetes. 58% had what they defined as high cholesterol, which is greater than 200 milligrams per deciliter or greater than 5.2 millimoles per liter. Their average age was 64. About 2/3 were on antihypertensives. This was basically a Caucasian trial. It was 98% Caucasians, 70% male. And what they did is they, and their average blood pressure, average systolic blood pressure was 145 and their BMI was 28. So that sort of gives you a picture of who was, of the type of people they were looking at. And what they did with this trial was they, as we've done in the past, and they used a couple of risk scores to go, let's get people at moderate risk. And for those of you who don't know what moderate risk is, which is pretty much what everyone shouldn't know because it's a silly word to use, but what they meant was that the 10-year risk would be somewhere between 10 and 20%. Most people suggest high risk is above 20 and low risk is below 10. So they did a couple of scores of these guys. They used the atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease risk score, which is the one that they use in the States. And they also used the Framingham score. Interestingly, they used the Framingham score just for coronary heart disease. So it was just, it wasn't, you know, strokes and all those things, which are less likely to occur than heart disease. So they used the mean Framingham score, and they thought that they would see around 14 or 15% of people having coronary heart disease in that 10-year period. And when they used the atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease risk score, and both of these, by the way, are available on our calculator, cbdcalculator.com, they thought, that, and that was looking at strokes and heart attacks, they figured they'd get about a 17% cardiovascular risk over 10 years. So that's basically what they were trying to do, because they thought that would demonstrate, you know, what is the benefit and or harm of using that, of using an aspirin in that patient population. Guess what happened, Mike?
they everything worked out wonderful, and aspirin cures heart disease.
Exactly, yeah. And it works quite well for leprosy. Shockingly, that was their secondary endpoint. I had no idea. So as we've talked about in the past, we've always said that these risk scores on average they're basically the worst case scenario. Most studies, when we looked at it, and we've looked at this in detail, Mike, that they overestimate risk. And so fortunately or unfortunately, I don't think it really matters, they didn't get the sort of event rate that they were talking about. In fact, it was quite a bit lower. We're talking about, for the primary endpoint, the risk was around 4 to 5%, instead of where they were looking at in the sort of 14 or 15%. So they still were able to, you know, make some conclusions at the end of it. So the main endpoint was the combination of myocardial infarction, stroke, cardiovascular death, unstable angina, or transient ischemic attack, which is all of sort of cardiovascular disease. And they really found no difference in the group that got either aspirin 100 milligrams daily enteric coated versus placebo. It was 4.3% in the aspirin group and 4.5% in the placebo group. And I know, even you know, Mike, that's really not different.
I'm not a scientist.
I'm not a scientist. I'm not even a doctor. I play one now. And so they looked at, you know, they looked at every different endpoint. They looked at overall mortality, and it was absolutely identical, 2.6 versus 2.6. They looked at non-fatal MIs. They looked at serious adverse events. And interestingly, the only statistical differences that they found were in two things, and that was any gastrointestinal bleed, and that was 1% in the aspirin versus 0.5% in the placebo, and then mild gastrointestinal bleeding was increased by about 0.3% in the people that got aspirin, and those were statistically significant differences. There were really no differences in severe GI bleeds. So basically, the conclusions of this article were that aspirin doesn't work in low-risk individuals, which is kind of interesting, because if any of us were going to make an assessment of cardiovascular risk, we probably would use one of these calculators. So I think you can confidently say that if you have a moderate-risk patient based on those calculators, aspirin doesn't help. However, it overestimates risk, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, these calculators are known for overestimating risk. This trial was 5 years long, and so it had a 4.5% event rate in 5 years. If you, most of the risk in a risk calculator is backloaded, which means that the risk is higher at the last 5 years than it is in the first 5 years. So these patients at 4.5 would probably have somewhere around an 11% cardiovascular event rate over 10 years.
Yeah.
Which isn't, I mean, it's still in the moderate range. It's not at the 17% that was estimated with the new US calculator, but it's still in that kind of hovering right around starting at the moderate range.
Yeah, the only nuance, and this is where it does get very nuanced, is that the atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease calculator is primarily strokes and heart attacks. So endpoint of this one was also included unstable angina and TIAs and so on. So it definitely, the risk was lower than what they anticipated, even though
this is something in almost all studies, and in fact it's been a problem for I think over a decade now, where they do sample size calculations, estimate the amount of people that they're going to need in the duration, and use these kind of risk estimates and cohort studies to base it on what are the chances these people are going to have events. And then in clinical trials, everyone has less events. And there's lots of reasons why that might occur. The people who are going into clinical trials might be different than those in the cohort studies and the ones used to base these risk models from. That might be one of the simple reasons, but it could just be that we're all getting a little bit less risky for cardiovascular disease.
Yeah, and as we talked about at the beginning, you know, these people are being treated for hypertension. They're, I'm trying to think exactly the number of people who were on statins. I think it was just under a half of the people who were on statins. But interestingly, 30% were smokers. So it's you know, really, so I guess the bottom line is, and this is their bottom line, I thought this was kind of an interesting discussion. They said, and I agree with it, but they said the use of aspirin remains a decision that should involve a thoughtful discussion between a clinician and a patient. given the need to weigh cardiovascular and possible cancer prevention benefits against the bleeding risks and patient preferences, cost, and other factors. And here's what's interesting. They said the ARRIVE data must be interpreted and used in the context of other studies which have tended to show a reduction in MI with less of an effect on total stroke. So they're going, well, ours didn't show anything, but something else did. And so it's really interesting. You know,
yeah.
You don't want to give up the dream. And then I love the very final statement. I just got to read it because it just makes me laugh.
I know.
The overall decision to use aspirin for cardiovascular effects should be done with the help of a clinician, given the complex calculus needed to balance all potential benefits and risks.
I'm pretty sure that most calculation.
I don't.
I'm calculus.
Anyway, I know for a fact that I think most of us would struggle with complex calculus. but it's not all that different for this study. Here's what you can say: in a moderate risk population, if you use those calculators, it doesn't do anything to cardiovascular risk and does increase your risk of bleeding. So I don't know, that's not a tremendously difficult decision.
Well, you have a formula for the deciding to use or offer aspirin, right? And it involves, is it sine or cosine in your calculation?
There's a cosine. And then you use a pack of cards, and if you pull out a joker, you just jokingly suggest you should take an aspirin. That's the way I've always done it.
That doesn't surprise me
at
all.
No.
Let's talk about the ASCEND study.
Yes.
Because
we've gone way too long on this one.
Yeah. So the ASCEND study was published in New England Journal, and it involved, we're gonna kind of speed through it a bit. Mm-hmm. It involved 15,500 people or so, and they were followed for 7.5 years. That's what their calculation was based on. They added in, their main events were MIs and strokes and death from any vascular cause, and they added in TIAs partway through because they wanted to increase the total number of events and therefore make it easier to show a difference, which lots of studies do. It's because for all the things we just talked about, that event rates are frequently lower than anticipated, and it's tricky to show differences. Mm-hmm. So that's why they wanted to. Let's talk about who's in here. James already mentioned that these are all diabetic patients, and they enrolled patients over the age of 40, but the mean age was 63. And I can't. This is an important thing because people glom on to what is the enrollment criteria rather than who actually went in. And I would say it's who went in that's more important.
Oh yeah, because you know, often it's, you know, we enroll people over the age of 19.
Yeah.
and then you look at the average age and it was 70, you know.
So everyone over 19. And we see this with diabetics and statins, for example. Mm-hmm. Every diabetic over age 40 should get a statin, and in those studies, they did enroll patients over 40, but the average age was in the 60s. Mm-hmm. So this is true too. This is that the average age is 63. 62% were male. Most patients were of white race, as you mentioned in the last
study. Yeah, like 90, and by most, it's like 97%.
Yeah, exactly. And current smoker was 8% only. They calculated risk. They used a different risk model. So if you were over 5% in 5 years, so not the 10 years, you were considered moderate. But it basically boils down to the same. And they had 40% at low risk, 43% or so at moderate risk, and at high risk was 17%. As I mentioned to you, this is a wholly diabetic trial, and these are all primary prevention. None of these patients had cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
So and they followed them.
Sorry, I was just going to say their average BMI was about 31, and their systolic blood pressure was about 136. So that paints the picture fairly well, I think.
Yeah. And this was a study done in Great Britain. Mm-hmm. And they were given 100 milligrams of aspirin.
Yeah.
Once a day.
Same as the other study.
This one was a dual study. It was a 2x2 design where they got N3 fatty acids in as well. They were randomized to that. And spoiler alert, they didn't find anything with N3 fatty acids. But what did they
another
find?
Another treatment that we desperately don't need studies anymore.
I know, but we desperately want it to be real.
Yeah.
We desperately want, the fatty acid stuff. Man. When are we going to stop flogging that horse? Yeah. But anyhow, here we are. This is, these guys did something that the last study didn't do. They provided the hazards ratios in the real, in the full range of percent. So it looks like there's really no difference. But mm-hmm. then they did what all studies do, is they pulled them out into a tiny increment of 15% and showed that there was a reduction in the aspirin arm, which occurred relatively quickly. And it was the hazards ratio was, or the rate ratio was 0.88, which means a 12% reduction. Now, what's interesting in the in the introduction of this, they said the average reduction is 12%. Guess what they found? 12% reduction.
Well, that's amazing.
It is absolutely amazing, and I know you're shocked and surprised both. Mm-hmm. The percent reduction was around, in absolute terms, was around a 1% reduction.
Yeah.
So not too dramatic, but still there. And then major bleeding, of course, went up by, guess how much, James?
Well, I'm thinking probably 50%. No. Almost the identical amount. Almost the same. Yeah. So just to put the numbers to it, it was any serious vascular event or revascularization. So that was a very broad thing. It wasn't just heart attacks and strokes. It was 12.1 in placebo and 10.8 in the aspirin group. So you're right, just over 1% benefit, and it was 4.1 versus 3.2. So was that a 0.9% absolute increase in any major bleeding? So.
Yeah, their original endpoint was serious vascular events, and that was 9.6 versus 8.5. So
yeah.
They were right around 1% for both bleeds and for the reduction in serious vascular events. So bleeds increased and bleeds increased and serious vascular events decreased, both by about 1%. Yeah.
Just to clarify, those are what they call major bleeds. This is not just a little bit of bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
They're serious GI bleeding into the eye. I don't want to say it, but intracranial hemorrhage.
Yes, and a relatively important outcome.
Apparently,
but
whoever gets those.
Whoever, one in 100,000.
Yeah, you're fully versed in
those.
So
you're just lucky. Yeah, so you're just lucky. So gastrointestinal tract cancers, that was the other thing they looked at, which was really good. And they were looking, because there's a discussion that these, while they create bleeds in the upper GI tract, they might be preventing colon cancer. So they included that, and the event rates were 2% versus 2%.
Yeah.
So James, you can do the reductions there and do the quick math on 2% versus 2%.
Yeah, I'll use some complex calculus to figure that out.
So the authors quite rightly point out this is more or less a wash.
Mm-hmm.
Given the absolute bleeding risk is of major bleeding is very similar to the absolute serious vascular events.
Yeah.
They did some stuff as well on looking at event rates for people who are higher risk. But if they were higher risk for cardiovascular events, they were higher risk for major bleeding. And that's been shown over and over again. So as you get more benefit from one, you also get more harm from the other.
Yeah.
And they showed that the risk predictions generally worked if you had a chance of having if you had about a 5% chance of having a vascular event in 5 years, the event rates were somewhere around 5% or so.
In this study, they used some sort of risk model that I'd never even heard of. So I don't know. I've never seen it used.
They're all similar, though. I think, wouldn't you say, like, they're all equally problematic and equally wonderful, if you like.
Yeah.
I suggest to people, if you're using one and are comfortable using it, use that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're likely all very similar. If you haven't chosen yet, then some Framingham or the new US one would be fine. But
yeah.
And Framingham's been adapted for Canada, or it's been trialed in Canada
yeah.
and But that's the only difference.
And just sort of a bit of a plug. So we've actually added in the most recent for our calculator. We've added in the most recent New Zealand data. So we got some of that data, and so there's now four different calculators that you can choose. The one caveat is that that data is for 5-year risk instead of 10 years, because that's the people in New Zealand are just different, and they want to prove it to the world. No, they're great.
I think they're upside down.
Oh, of course, yeah. So the risk, so they're presenting everything in an upside down world. Yeah, mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah,
so
you're right.
Where you were using cosine, they're using sine.
Oh, that's the difference. Now I get it. It's that freaking complex calculus. But no, it was really nice because that's
that to the end of the podcast.
Yeah, because the lead author of the paper that put all that data together contacted us and said, could you please put this on your calculator, because there's no other place where they're going to be using it. There's no actually sort of public process. So we were happy to do that and thrilled that they were interested in putting it on our calculator. So we did that relatively quickly. So hopefully if you're in New Zealand, you might want to check that out. So I don't, bottom line, Mike, it doesn't change anything. Even though we've got one study of 5 years, one study of 7 years, it doesn't really change anything.
And I like that beforehand, we went into this thinking that aspirin reduced cardiovascular event rate by about 12%. Mm-hmm. And what they found was it reduced cardiovascular event rates by about 12%.
Wow.
And the absolute event rates were very similar to the amount of bleeding that was caused.
And boy, that's been, I'm pretty sure I've heard that story before. I have to go back and look. But the most important thing, Mike, is,
yes,
I'm sure I speak for everyone, we are thrilled that you are doing well. Because
thanks.
That was very now, the slurred speech, the incomprehensible information that you just presented is nothing to do with what happened.
No, that's been present for around 300 podcasts.
Yeah, go back and listen. But no, we're really thrilled, because that must have been scary for you and your family and all that sort of stuff. And we're really, and I'm personally very happy that you're now back in the lovely British Columbia, where we get way less snow than you would have gotten in Edmonton.
Well, I had to wait to go to hospital because my wife had to phone the insurance companies first.
And then quick
before the ambulance.
Yeah, and then quickly write out a will. But yeah,
just
no.
Side here.
Yeah, but no, that's no, that was scary.
Cheap.
And
this is awesome.
Yeah. No. So we're glad you're back, and so we will be ramping up the number of podcasts that we're doing. Just back to where we were before. We're going to do a number of tools for practice. We want to make sure we let people know about the PIPE conference, Mike.
The PIPE conference on Friday, October 19th and October 20th. And it's all set to go. We have some nice pre-conference workshops, including on managing opioid use disorder in your practice, and lots of topics, a wide variety of topics. Someone's even talking on biologics, James.
No, that's, but the guy's an idiot, so don't listen to that part.
But we have a lot of great topics, and we hope you can come and attend. It would be great to see you in person.
And if you're looking for information, I'm sure you could just Google it, but you can go to our site and there's a link for the conference where you click on it, and if you want to register. So I think we will leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you soon.